Cloud Speaker Studios. Cloud Speaker Studios.
Tromaville, news on the march.
Good morning, Tromaville, and welcome to a very special episode of Talkin' Troma with your host, me, Zach Bynes. Noticed I said me and not I. That's because there is no I in team, especially the Troma team. As there's no I in the Troma team, there's no I in the Talkin' Troma team, especially if you misspell talkin'. Part of what makes this team so great is my wonderful producer, Chris Lamphere. The other day, I was talking to Chris, and he had a great episode idea for the show. And I'm right now, I am deep in the bush studying the films of Louis Sue, and I needed to give that my full attention, no half-mass attention there. And so I said, Chris, and he said, yes. I said, Chris, you'll do anything for this show, right, Chris? And he said, sure thing, Zach. I'll even kill for you, Zach, if you want me to. I'll kill for you. Tell me who you want me to kill. I said, that won't be necessary this time. But you have such a great idea for an episode. I think you should take the reins on this one. It's such a super episode with founder of Super 7 Toys, Brian Flynn. And what follows this introduction is Chris's wonderful interview with Brian Flynn. I've learned a lot about the toy field, and not just the toys that are in the films of Louis Sue, soon to be heard about on Talkin' Troma, but this is more of a all-family affair type of episode. So with that, I want you to sit back and relax and hear the soothing sounds of a wonderful man in Fort Collins, Chris Lamphere, Brian Flynn, and Super 7 Toys. Let's listen.
Founded in 2001, Super 7 is the premier pop culture design house and producer of lifestyle-oriented collectibles, toys, and apparel based in San Francisco. Led by designer Brian Flynn, Super 7 has two primary toy lines, reaction figures at 3¾ inches that were inspired by the original Kenner Star Wars figures from the late 1970s, and Ultimates, which are 7-inch scale figures with premium decoration, accessories, and interchangeable parts. Super 7 has also designed, manufactured, and distributed officially licensed programs for G.I. Joe, Transformers, Disney, Powell Peralta, and Peanuts, as well as for music legends the world over. The company released their first reaction figure based on the Toxic Avenger in 2017. Toxie made his debut as one of the very first Ultimates figures in 2019, along with a wave of reaction figures based on the Toxic Crusaders. An expanded Ultimates line for Toxic Crusaders followed in 2022.
I want to take this moment to welcome Mr. Brian Flynn from Super 7 to the show. Brian, welcome to Talkin' Troma.
Nice to be here. We're talking about some Toxie. We're talking about some stuff.
Yes, we are talking Toxic Crusaders. And Super 7 has seemed to have kind of a love affair with this property. At what I was researching earlier, and there are 9 different variants of the reaction Toxie around out there.
9?
Yeah.
I would have guessed at least 7. I don't know about 9, but I would have guessed at least 7.
I do have a list. There was the blue one originally. Then there was the same one with the Toxic Crusader color. There was the glow in the dark. There was the second version.
The one with like the dirty card.
The dirty card. Yeah, the movie variant. Then there was the actual re-sculpt for the Toxic Crusaders cartoon. Then there was Acid Rain Toxie, the Brain Dead Toxie.
Yep.
And then the recolor Remco style packaging Toxie.
And then there was the one that, well, I guess it was it the Acid Rain one, the one that came with Toys That Time Forgot, part of their Kickstarter?
That was its own color, because that's actually this guy. That was the Toxic Crusaders color, but with the translucent green plastic.
Yep. And, you know, it tells me I'm overdue for figuring out another colorway of that guy.
Well, and the colorways keep going strong, because there are currently 4 variants of the Ultimates Toxie, the most recent of which being the cartoon version, which is quite frankly my favorite version because it's the first time we've gotten one with an actual tune accurate head and a tune accurate Blobby, which is very, very cool.
Yeah, I mean, Toxie is, I don't know, I hate to say he's the gift that keeps on giving, but that's kind of how it goes. It's surprising how well he continues to be received, so much so that, you know, it's like, all right, got to make more Toxie, more Toxie.
Well, I mean, not only that, too, but like when you first started the Ultimates line, that for a very brief period, they were called Deluxe figures. It seems you hadn't quite settled on the Ultimates branding yet. And one of the first of those was Toxie as well.
Well, and what the Deluxe was originally was, obviously, it's our larger size format. The difference between the transition from Deluxe to Ultimates was literally the number of accessories and heads and everything you came with. So we started with that line in Deluxe, and it's like, it comes with some cool stuff. It's, you know, like a toy. It's great. And then we're like, all right, what if we go bananas? What if we just make everything? We just make the Ultimate version. It's got like three heads and eight sets of hands and six weapons. And then, so that was the transition to Ultimates.
For sure.
People were into that. We're like, let's just do that.
And I've got to say, as someone who's been collecting really since the He-Man Classics days, this latest wave of Toxic Crusaders, officially wave three, even though a lot of people consider it wave one, I've got to say is some of the best figures I think y'all have ever done.
They're kind of preposterous. I mean, Junkyard is huge. And that tongue is massive.
Yeah, when I got the Junkyard box in the mail, I was like, this can't be right. Like, yeah. There's actually like a scale to this dude, whereas, you know, obviously the Playmate ones were all, you know, they were all within scale of each other, but they were very small, very recessed because they had to fit into, God, what, a $3 price point back in those days, something like that.
I think you'd love to think it was $3, but I think even then they were $6.99, I think.
They probably were. I just remember when the series got canceled, they hit the clearance bins pretty quickly, and then they were $3.
I think it's an interesting thing with toy lines. I find that a lot of the vintage toy lines sometimes that people have great affinity for were the toy lines that ended up on clearance, because that meant they got a fair number of them because they were affordable, and their parents could get them or splurge for them, or they got extras. Where if it was like a really popular toy line that was always at full price, they only sometimes, depending on the people, sometimes they only had a couple. But some of those really great toy lines that also went on heavy clearance for a long time, people love. Silverhawks kind of falls into that. Like, you know, there's lots and lots of waves of Silverhawks, and yet that show only lasted a brief time. So, but they were all on clearance and you could get them. And I think that's the same thing. Like for a lot of people, if you ask them about Beetlejuice, they're like, you squeeze its leg together and it pops apart and his head's on a cockroach. And it's like, no, we're talking about the movie. They're like, I don't know what you're talking about. The toy.
Yeah. For a lot of people, it was the toy line in the cartoon series, which, you know, lasted for several years. But like Toxic Crusaders is kind of an interesting one because it ran for 13 episodes, one season. There were plans for a second series, but that never happened. The syndication didn't take off. And what's strange is that like the entire crew that made Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, from, you know, MWS Animation Studio to Coloronian at Playmates to the people at Anaglyph Studios and Varner Studios, like, they were all putting the same energy into this that they put into Turtles. Why do you think Turtles took off and Toxic Crusaders didn't?
I think this is the thing, and it's to some degree no different than Pop, in a way that Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles was lightning in a bottle. It had never happened before, and it can't necessarily be replicated. I mean, you had Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, and people tried to make, you know, Black Belt Hamsters and Biker Mice from Mars. And, you know, here's all these things that are just the same, but it's not the same.
Right.
You know, and with Toxic Crusaders, it's just such a crazy concept because they're like, all right, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. I mean, how that worked. And then to think you know what the sequel for that should be? How about that Toxic Avenger movie? We'll make them gross. And it's like, I think they were trying to channel half of Garbage Pail Kids and half of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, and they figured that could be the evolution. But whatever the combination that made Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles what it was just unique to it. It wasn't a formula that could be replicated. And clearly, they were trying to replicate the formula, and that generally never works.
Certainly. I mean, there's one thing taking like a, you know, a fairly gritty comic book that Eastman and Laird's original Ninja Turtles were. It's another thing to take, you know, a very hard R type of property where a child's head gets squashed by a car and try to make that into a children's cartoon show. It's not going to quite have the same immediate impact. But interestingly, and like in the fullness of time, like Toxic Crusaders, Silverhawks, even Biker Mice from Mars is back with a new line. So we're kind of in this phase of like what's old is new again.
There's a little bit of that for sure. I mean, that's cyclical to every generation. What comes up, I think the strength of what Toxic Crusaders is, which is clearly differentiated from Toxic Avenger, is just that the toys were so absolutely bananas. They were so far gone, but done so well. Like, I was in college when those came out. This was when I started going back to collecting my toys from childhood. So this would have been, what, 92, 91?
Yeah, they hit in 91, 92.
91, 92. So for me, the summer of 91, which was after my sophomore year of college, I went home and I was like, God, I want my Star Wars figures again. And I started like going to flea markets, trying to find them. And I was like, well, what else is being made? And I went into the toy store, and obviously I know what Toxic Avenger is, but I've seen the Toxic Crusader toys, and I'm like, these are the most bananas, screwed up things that have ever been made.
Okay, you were warned to back off this Toxic Crusader stuff, and you didn't listen. I've also seen some of you picking up litter and recycling newspapers. What's next? Ride sharing? Be reasonable. If the atmosphere of the Earth improves too drastically, you'll lose the opportunity to meet a superior alien race. This Toxic Crusader thing can only end one way. Either you chill out, or you check out.
Like that little era, the stuff they made for some of the stuff at the tail end of Real Ghostbusters, the stuff that they were making for Toxic Crusaders, the stuff they were making for Beetlejuice, you know, they succeeded in making Aliens a line for kids all in that time frame. And you're just like, these are the most bonkers toys I've ever seen. And for me, Toxic Crusaders was one of those. I had everything back then. Mm-hmm. I had the helicopter, all of it. And it was just, there's no toys like Toxic Crusaders. And I think that that's why it has such a life outside of Toxic Avenger. You know, it's the toys drove it, not the animation.
Absolutely. I mean, there's people who love the toys and grew up collecting those that never saw the Toxic Avenger movies.
Yeah.
Or were way too young, you know, to watch them when they came out. So, I mean, it's kind of genius in a way, but it's also like, perhaps before its time in a way too, because now there's been this kind of appreciation and this resurgence. I mean, there's a Toxic Crusaders video game coming out early next year, which is kind of incredible when you think about it.
Man, please tell me it's like a side-scrolling 16-bit game.
Yep, it's a side-scroller beat-em-up. You know, if you've seen TMNT Shredder's Revenge, it's very similar to that, but it's been in production for 2 years prior to that. So
that's it. That's all you got to do. And everybody will just line up, be like, here's my paycheck.
Exactly. So
chocolate and peanut butter, put it into Reese's peanut butter cup of Toxie.
Speaking of Reese's Peanut Butter Cup, let's not bury the lead. Part of the reason we're talking today is because you are unveiling a New York Comic Con exclusive variant of the Radiation Ranger that glows in the dark has not been done before. I mean, the Radiation Ranger itself just came out last year with Wave 3. So what made it a good time and a good choice to go glow in the dark on this army builder?
Well, I think first and foremost, if anybody is paying attention to Super 7, they know that we will use any and all excuses to make things glow in the dark. So, you know, there's never a bad time for glow in the dark. And then secondly, for whatever reason, in the vintage line, Radiation Ranger was my favorite character in the vintage line. You know, I liked Major Disaster. I liked Monad. I liked the other ones. But I don't know. It was something about that striking yellow that I just, he was always my favorite.
Yeah.
And I can always imagine him as glow in the dark. Like, he just looks like he should glow in the dark.
The colors on that are so vibrant with the yellow and the pink on the backpack and everything. It basically glows without having glowing pigment. It's pretty incredible. And that figure was sculpted by Varner Studios, who did the entire line, specifically Eddie Mosqueda, who sculpted several figures for the line. And he said that the Radiation Ranger was one of his favorites. Because when Troma tried to get Toxic Crusaders produced, they had Toxie, and they didn't really have a lot of other character designs. They were basically hoping that Playmates and the team at Varner would kind of help come up with characters. And so Eddie Mosqueda essentially invented the Radiation Ranger. So everything that we love about that sculpt comes from him.
Oh, man. You know, same thing. The pinkish purple hoses that you had to connect into the backpack and everything.
Mm-hmm.
All those little details about that line were just, yeah, I guess they were ahead of their time, but nobody really came back to it later either. There was just an immense attention to the little details on those figures that made that line so special.
I never thought we would get such detailed posable characters in a 7-inch scale for Toxic Crusaders. I never thought that like there would be figures, you know, other than the Playmates ones. And now, you know, Super 7 is kind of first to the dance with Toxic Crusaders. And there are other companies out there, you know, putting out Toxic Crusaders figures, which is...
Trick or Treat Studios is doing some stuff. Look, great guys over there. They've got an 8-inch and I think a 12-inch coming out.
They also just at New York Toy Fair, they showed off figures for Dr. Killamoff and Yvonne and Mayor Grody based off of the original prototypes that were sculpted but never produced.
They're really good guys, and they're obviously big, big Toxie fans. They're big horror fans of anything and everything. So it's great that they're doing it. I think there's a couple other things happening as well that'll maybe ahead of that. But it's the same thing. It's like, I think a lot of people were like, well, that's not going to work. You know, I love it, but it'll never work. And it's like, wait, those guys made how many, as you said before? They made 9 versions of that character? Maybe it does work. Let's give it a shot.
It's interesting, too, within the kind of toy collector communities, you see some people who are like, oh, cool, a new variant, you know, something I hadn't thought of. It sparkles or it glows or it, you know, does something different. But then there's also that kind of like vocal but small contingent who are like, man, I don't know about another recolor or a repaint. Like, give me new characters. But I think
that's a you're using their words very politely.
Yeah, I mean, they may feel a little bit more different about it. But I it's interesting, too, because I think there are a lot of people out there who collect that don't quite understand the economics of the toy business and how, you know, reuse and redecos help spread out the costs so that you can start producing more figures.
It's a multi-layered question there. The first thing is I always come back to is, especially with toy collectors now, most people that collect toys now have been collecting for quite some time. And they were collecting at a time when not as much has been made. Right now, there are more toys of better quality and wider variety of every license being made than ever before that you can imagine.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're coming from the mindset of I collect and I love this line and I'm searching out every version of it that exists, I'm a completist kind of type of person, you know, you've got that kind of mentality ingrained in yourself. And so now if you're in here and we're on colorway 9, you might have that feeling of like, I'm getting fleeced. I'm being taken advantage of. They're just making this to make money off me. And that's not really the case. It's just as a collector for myself, and I think for a lot of other people, you get to a certain point where you don't have to have everything, but you have things that you like. And when you like them in multitude. If that makes any sense. And it's sort of like mm-hmm. when you go see anything that's installed in repetition. Like you can go into, you know, a restaurant someplace and they'll have 400 hubcaps lined up. And you don't really care about hubcaps, but seeing 400 different ones all lined up, you're like, oh, that's pretty cool. And it could be soda bottles. It could be license plates. It could be anything. And so when you get on those sculpts that people just love, it is one of those things where you're like, oh, okay, let's make some more because that person that loves it, I do want another. I want another to put up here. And if you're the first person, get your original Toxie, check it off the list, move on. If you're the other person, we keep making that for you and for us so that you can keep having. If you go back and look at like the original Alien sculpt that we made now, like 11 years ago, we made like 8 or 9 colorways of it. Then we made the blind boxes and alien eggs. I think in the end, there's like 27 colorways of that original. Mm-hmm. And it's still one of those where people are like, okay, what is the next one? I'm like, I can't make alien right now. Well, I'd like some more. Same thing with the Misfits. When we did the Misfits Fiend and Reaction, I mean, we were coloring up to match record covers and all that. Packaging's a big part of it. But we got to 23 or 24 colorways of the Misfits as well. And it wasn't like, it was just like we ran out of ways to color it. The customer was still like, okay, I haven't got my Misfits this month. And so I think it's important for people to understand that there's more than one kind of collector. And it's okay that not every product is specifically for you. Mm-hmm. And most of them are coming from a time where they felt like there was so little being made that it was for them, if that makes any sense.
Sure.
And so, you know, you have that dynamic going on. Secondly, with certain lines that we have, not necessarily saying this one, there are times where we go, I don't think I can sell enough of these to overcome the cost of tooling and the cost of production. But I know there's a diehard fan base, but if I can make 4 recolors at 1/4 the quantity each, then I can get to the number I need. Mm-hmm. And so that's what you see with some stuff like The Worst. I mean, The Worst is super fun, but not very many people know what it is. But the people that like it are into it. You know that we're going to give you at least 4 colorways in the end over time because I can't sell enough to justify it out of 1 colorway. So there's a bit of strategy.
That makes a lot of sense. And it's not something I think a lot of people consider. And also the fact that like as a collecting community, we're kind of spoiled by an embarrassment of riches right now.
Completely.
And it's something where they go, oh man, you know, I'm angry that I'm getting another Toxie and I'm not getting, you know, Dr. Killamoff or something. It's like, okay, that's fair, I suppose. But at the same time, it's like you said, like, there are different types of collectors out there, and especially with a character like Toxie or like the Ninja Turtles, where, you know, the turtles themselves are the core of the line, you always have to have some version of that available for people who are coming into it kind of later, right?
Yes, definitely. And then what you were saying a split second before is, yeah, it's not only for them, but it's like, just because I'm not selling it to you today doesn't mean you're not going to get it. So that also comes back into people's brains, what they're thinking about, what their expectation of your line plan is. So if they're like, cool, you made Chokeyard and you made Radiation Ranger, that means Killamoff is next. And when Killamoff isn't next, I get very upset because clearly we've been talking about this, but they had been. Mm-hmm. That internal dialogue sometimes. But that doesn't mean that I'm not going to get to it. I just haven't yet.
That's actually one of the most common questions we got from our audience when I mentioned that we'd be talking was kind of what you can speak to in terms of Super 7's commitment to the line, because there is a unfortunate sentiment out there from among some people that they're hesitant to collect the line because they don't know that they're going to get all of the characters. What do you say to people who feel that way?
I feel like that Well, there's a couple answers there. I think the first answer is, if somebody's trying to tell us right now, I don't know that I want to collect the line because I don't know if I'm going to get all the characters. It's like, we started this line like 4 years ago, 5 years ago. And when people started buying it, it allowed us to make more characters. And if you don't buy it, I don't get to make other characters.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, and your version of the complete line is an arbitrary statement that you made up in your own brain. Are you saying it's the complete line of figures that were made in the past? Does that include vehicles? Does it not include vehicles? Does it include prototypes and unreleased figures? Does it not? Does it include just the ones you played with? Like, what if you don't like one of those guys? What if you don't like Too Bad or somebody? Like, mm-hmm. is it important? Well, I'm not going to collect the line. They didn't make him. Do you like him? No. Well, I wasn't going to buy him anyways. Well, it's the yin and the yang. Usually what I find that excuse is not necessarily, and there's no way to say this where it doesn't sound sort of negative, but a lot of times is somebody would like to collect the line, but can't for any number of reasons. Might be financial, might be space, might be desire, or simply that they feel like they need to speak up in some sort of forum or some sort of setting because everybody else is talking about it. Mm-hmm. And it's much easier to deflect and say you can't because of reason X or Y rather than actually saying, you know what, it's not for me. I'm not interested. Because they want to be a part of the conversation. So I don't have anything to say to all those people, but like if you're telling me you're not going to collect the line right now because you don't know where it's going to go, like, really? We've been around for a while. It's yeah. slow going, I agree. But if you don't know where the whole line is going, you would have never bought any of them to begin with.
And it's a marathon, not a sprint, right? I think people are, again, spoiled by the frequency with which, you know, certain other more mainstream lines that are sold in retail stores come out. You know, you look at WWE and there's 10 new figures every couple of months. You know, you look at Masterverse, there's a ton of new figures all the time. Like there are certain lines where they're just being pumped out. Marvel Legends, another great example.
Yeah.
But.
And Marvel Legends has been making figures now for what, 15 years?
Yeah.
At least, you know, like they built a community of people just around Marvel Legends, but it didn't start that way.
Right. I think people do this kind of apples to oranges comparison where they look at what companies like Super 7 are doing and they look at what companies like Mattel or Hasbro are doing and they expect them to be the same and they don't quite understand why it isn't.
This gets brought up a lot where people, especially when we're talking about price and how I like to kind of phrase this for people, it makes it a little easier for it to understand. It's like, all right, everybody you know is talking about this, right? All the fans are talking about this. Everybody I know bought one. You guys must be killing it. I'm like, all right. When you walk out of the door, you wake up in the morning, you walk out of the front door to go to work, take your kids to school or whatever it is, through the entirety of your day till you come back home, do you ever run into a single other person that collects toys or is interested in toys or knows what it is that you collect or are interested in? And the answer is no, unless you work at a toy store or you're sitting there at waiting for the doors to open at Target with the other guy going to run to the back.
Right, right.
You know, and it's the sprint. I'm going to beat the Hot Wheel guy. Hold on. You know, there's far fewer of us than people want to believe because they go back and they, whether it's their Instagram algorithm, their Facebook algorithm, the groups they're in, they're still on forums, the forums they check, the YouTube content they digest, whatever it may be. They're in a loop of people that are interested in what they're interested in because they wouldn't watch it if they aren't interested in it. But that group is much, much, much smaller than I think anybody really believes because a room full of a couple hundred people feels like a lot of people, but it's still mm-hmm. only a couple hundred.
Well, and also, too, I think, you know, there are other companies who benefit from economies of scale. You know, you look at Marvel Legends or even like the Playmate stuff with like, you know, Ninja Turtles, Mutant Mayhem. They're putting 1 or 6 or 10 of every figure in a wave in every Walmart and Target in the country. And that's just the U.S.
Well, let's back that up real quick. So we'll do some quick math. So first off, getting a figure up and running. Let's just say, for easy math, it's going to cost us $20,000 in tooling to get a figure up. All right? If you make 1,000 figures, that means that $2 of every figure is going to have $2 worth of cost in it. If you make 10,000 figures, it's 20 cents. If you make 100,000 figures, it's 2 cents. So first, talk about cost versus how many you make. There are roughly a little over 2,000 targets. There's a little over 6,000 Walmarts in the United States. So if you're talking about Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, APEG goes at Target and Walmart. That's 6,000 pegs if they're in all stores. And those pegs are usually racked 4 to 6 deep. Depends on the kinds of store. But let's take it to the bottom side, which is 4. So initial setup, not replenishment, just initial setup at those stores is 24,000 pieces. Then replenishment. So replenishment is usually at least double. So those guys are banking on 48,000 minimum just before they even get started, just to see if the product is even successful. And that's 48,000 for one peg. But like the new Turtles set just came out and have like a dozen figures.
Mm-hmm.
You know, 3 wide, 4 tall, or 4 wide, 3 tall, whatever. So 12 figures in a line, or sometimes they're double. Same figure will be on 2 pegs. But whatever, say it's 12 different figures, you know, they're loading in 500,000 figures, you know, day one. That's why it can be the price that it is. So somebody like we're doing is we're not loading in like that. We're not selling through like that. I mean, you talk about some of those pegs, and they're designed to turn like a figure a week. So that means that peg stacks with 4 and they sell a figure to a figure and a half a week. It's replenishing every 3 to 4 weeks. And then they set it usually twice a year. So you can then go backwards and go, okay, if it's 4 per month to 6 per month over 6 months, you know, same thing. That one figure is being made 250,000 to 500,000 units. So all the tooling, you know, economies of scale, everything comes into play where we're going to do something, we're going to make it one time, a very small run, and that's it. All there is. And it's for a very finite group of people. The amount of people as an adult looking for a Toxic Avenger versus the amount of 8-year-olds looking for the latest turtle is a vastly different number.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why you generally don't see anything. That's why the collector stuff is where the DVDs used to be, because we can't compete with the dollars that they generate. I simply cannot move that many things off a peg. The peg speed in collector is radically different than the peg speed in the toy aisle. But even then, if you're talking about the Hasbros and everything else, their comparable product with less stuff is still $29.99 these days. And somebody's like, yours is so much more. And it's like, it's more, but it's not disproportionate. Proportionately more.
Right. When you take into account the amount of plastic, the amount of tooling that goes into it, the, you know, packaging that has a lot more work put into it. I mean, there's spot varnish on every package, there's the window box, there's everything. And that all adds up when you have something that's designed as kind of a, I suppose, like a premium experience versus a Marvel Legend that there's, you know, a warehouse full of them.
And it is part of that experience. Like you want everything to be custom. Like you don't need what I make. So when you touch it, the first thing you're going to touch is the box. So the box needs to make you feel just as good as the toy when you finally get it out of the box. I think what people also, you know, look at, which is invisible to a lot of people, is just the extra expense in the kinds of plastics that we use and the different things that we do. It's like you don't hear about our figure breaking, limbs snapping, things like that. Doesn't happen because we're paying for better grade and different materials. There's a lot of different materials that we use. It's different than what you might typically get. I'm not trying to trash that other stuff. I'm not. It's just that that's why it's more expensive, because if you get it from me and it breaks, that's a problem.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you get it from me and it breaks, we immediately replace it. But we're also like, how did it break? Like, that shouldn't happen. And I don't think that you hear about that. You know, I'm sure you can easily Google it and you'll find two or three examples here and there, but you're not going to find many.
Yeah, absolutely. And personally, I've probably got about 30 or so Super 7 figures. Never had anything break on them.
That stuff is largely invisible to everybody. And the other thing that's always funny to me is people confuse articulation with expense usually. They're like, this thing bends 8 more times. Like, why is this the same price? And it's like, articulation is not more or less expensive. It's technically a little bit more because of the assembly fee at mm-hmm. the factory, but it isn't. It's more, these are aesthetic point of view choices that you make. But just because something can bend into a circle doesn't mean it's worth more or more expensive to make.
I remember seeing another interview that you did where you talked about the aesthetic choice of, yes, you know, you could include another elbow cut that allows it to rotate like this, but the amount of plastic that you have to cut out of the joint to do that, you know, it loses kind of the overall appearance that you're going for. And I think anybody that buys collector figures should understand like why those choices are made. And if it's not for you, it's not for you. That's fine. But like, there's 8 million other choices out there too. So what are you worried about?
Yeah, I mean, it's that tricky part again, where being able to understand that you don't have to have everything, not everything is designed for you, that there are other collectors out there, is a little tricky for some people. I don't know. It's a fine line, because nothing that we're making is, you know, essential. Mm-hmm. So if it doesn't hit you in the sweet spot, don't buy it. It's okay. And then you run into, once again, for a lot of people, if they've been thinking about something and they want something, let's make it up today. You know, whatever. This bird has a deluxe figure, and I've been wanting that my whole life. And then somebody makes it, but it doesn't look like that, or it doesn't act the way they want it to do. It's almost worse when it's close, but not the way it was supposed to be, than if it was completely wrong.
Right. Like,
being 85% of the way there is more infuriating than if it was 50% of the way there. Because then they can be like, oh, well, it's fine.
I hadn't considered that, but that makes sense.
You're listening to a podcast on the Loudspeaker Network. Loudspeaker is a listener-supported nonprofit public radio service and production studio devoted to amplifying the voices, stories, and artistic expressions of underserved communities. We can't do this without the support of our listeners. If you enjoy our programming, become a member of Loudspeaker and support our mission with a donation of your choice. Learn more at loudspeaker.org.
Yeah, it's just, you know, because once again, people are emotional about this stuff. I feel like I'm repeating myself, but people buy this for emotional reasons. They don't buy it for logical reasons. They don't need it.
You're in the business of nostalgia, and that's going to, it's going to hit exactly right for some people. And for some people, it's not going to match what they had in their head. So they're going to, you know, either complain or not buy it, or both. But you know, okay, whatever.
Yeah, yeah, you know, and hopefully maybe the next one does hit you the right way. Sorry that this one doesn't, but there's also a guy sitting next to you. At least I hope there's a guy sitting next to you that's like, dude, I love it.
Yeah.
Amazing.
When the first Toxie Ultimate figure or Deluxe figure got announced, I was that guy. I was like, I am buying this. First thing I'd ever bought from Super 7 was that figure.
Wow.
I had heard of the company before then through, you know, the Motu Classics, but I hadn't ever purchased any. So I was like, well, I don't really know who these guys are, but this is like one of the coolest things I've ever seen. And I can't see anyone else making it. So hell yeah, here's my money.
Yeah, and then when it showed up, it's the same thing too. A lot of people really like having to prepay and wait a year. You know, that's a lot for people. You know,
sure,
because it feels like an eternity. For a lot of people, I feel like they're like, I forgot I ordered that, and then they showed up like another present.
Well, it feeds into the emotionality of the whole thing for people, right?
Yeah, I mean, like I said, I keep blanking on his name, and he'll remind me via Instagram. But, you know, when we went to PowerCon, it was right after Toxie had shipped, and there was a gentleman there who Junkyard was his favorite growing up, and he showed up, and he had made a necklace to carry his Junkyard around. He was walking around with this necklace with Junkyard holding on through it at the show. Because he was just so happy with it and wanted to take it with him everywhere and show everybody. And that's the business I'm in right there.
Mm-hmm. It really is one of the coolest figures I've ever seen. I mean, I don't even have the good tongue head on here right now, but like, how can you not love this thing? It's incredible. The painting on it, the sculpting on it, like the details, like the bandages on his tail and how matty and dirty he looks, yet still kind of like, I don't know, lovable in a strange way. I mean,
he's still a little cuddly.
Yeah. I mean, that's a hard aesthetic to try to hit.
Up there.
Yeah. You know, you want to cuddle up with your Junkyard.
Exactly.
So getting back to the line, we're kind of going all over the place, but
that's all right.
So we did have listeners submit some questions to us. So
all right,
we've got a few for you. The first one being, so far there's only been one wave of Toxic Crusaders reaction figures. And if we are talking about the original nine Playmates figures, that leaves three characters still to do. Is that something that's still on the roadmap in terms of production?
When we're talking about Toxie in reaction form, that definitely, like Toxie himself seemed to resonate. The rest of the Crusaders did not really resonate. They did not do particularly well. And what I think happens there is reaction, obviously, for everybody listening. If you don't already know, I assume you do. If you've made it this long in this video, you know. But, you know, it's a throwback to the old Kenner aesthetic. It's the 1970s to 1980s action figure format. When you're talking about something like Toxic Crusader, those kids didn't grow up with that aesthetic. So if you've got the Varner figures and you look at those 3 3/4 reaction figures, you're like, these regressed. These didn't really, they don't hit my sweet spot because they're to a degree, I think for that person, they feel lesser than the original figures. We see this the same sort of way with Power Rangers to a degree that customer really didn't grow up with 3 3/4, so the format and the simplicity of it is mystifying to some. Now, to some of them, they love it. They have no qualms on it. So that's why I think the Ultimates actually perform better than the reaction in the case of Toxie. So to the question is, we sculpted them, but I don't think they're going to come out, at least not right now. It just didn't, you know, I hate to be the guy to be like, it didn't work out. You know, but it's like, it just was one of those where they came out and everyone went, that's neat. Okay. And then left. We're like, oh man, come on. Everybody loves Toxie. We've done nine versions. But the rest of it, they were just kind of like, it just lukewarm would be a polite statement, I think.
Sure. Yeah. They didn't exactly set the world on fire, which is unfortunate because like some of those sculpts are really fantastic in and of themselves. Like the Headbanger figure is fantastic. Yeah. The Kill 'Em Off figure is really great.
Obviously it's something
like they're just so, like the designs are already so silly that like them in that sort of, that smaller scale is just like absurd. And I love it.
If you have enough to know the reference and understand and appreciate it, then it makes sense. You're like, oh, these things make complete sense. But if you don't, you don't. We ran into this. I'll use the example that may be a little easier to understand. When we made the Shogun Stormtrooper now, like 12 or 13 years ago, you know what I'm talking about?
Mm-hmm.
For those listening, it was the 1970s Jumbo Mashinder, a.k.a. what was brought over as Shogun Warriors format, but done as a Stormtrooper. We had it at San Diego, and you'd have person after person walk up and go, that's an ugly Stormtrooper. that doesn't even look anything like it. Had several people go, you know, like, stupid firing fist. It doesn't do that. And then you'd have the guy that walked up that grew up on Shogun Warriors, and his brain would literally just melt out of his ears. Just be like, oh my God, it's a Shogun Warrior, it's a Stormtrooper. Please tell me the fist shoots. Please tell me the fist shoots. You're like, of course the fist shoots. They're like, oh my God. You know, but you had to have an attachment to that scale and format and size. Otherwise, it was just a weird, ugly Stormtrooper.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like that's sort of the analogy that I'm trying to make around Reaction and Toxic Crusaders, because I think it was great, but I think most of the people that grew up with Toxic Crusaders are like, I don't get it. I'm clearly missing something here.
Sure. The sad thing is that they're, you know, the people who just like to complain online, they use the quote unquote lack of completion, for lack of a better term, of the Reaction figures as some sort of indication of how the Ultimates are going. And I think those people are just trying to find excuses to justify their position instead of, you know, just accepting things on face value and realizing that they're different products for different people and not everything's going to hit.
Yeah. And, you know, quite honestly, I think a lot of it sometimes is people feel the need to comment. There's something that we noticed a very, very long time ago, like mid-2000s. In the early days of the internet, we would launch a product. If it got massive amounts of comments on it, like, oh my God, can't wait, gotta order this, I'll be first in line, that product was gonna tank. If it got a moderate amount of comments, it would do great. Because everybody that wanted it was like, yeah, cool. They didn't feel the need to comment or say something. It was just like, yep, giggle, no problem. Moving on. You know, where for some reason when people were like, oh, I'm not going to get that, they felt the need to comment for some reason.
Mm-hmm.
And usually the comments would be overflowingly positive. And then you'd be like, how did this not sell? And we just not over and over again, but we noticed that pattern after a while. We're like, oh, this one's getting a lot of traction at everybody talking it up. I bet this doesn't do well. That's what would happen.
Yeah, it's all, for whatever reason, it's always the complainers who are the most vocal. And
well,
they
I think
tend
it's
to...
because they feel the need to talk about it, where the person that likes it and is interested in it has already completed their journey with it. They don't need to comment on it. They're like, yeah, cool. Looks awesome.
They don't need validation because they already know this is for me. I'm buying it.
Yeah, exactly. So I'll use that as a thing. Like, that's why the like button is so interesting, if you will, in that context. It's like, you know, as you're scrolling through and you see something awesome, you don't need to feel that, oh, hell yeah. You just go, like, moving on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, unless you have something editorial that you need to say, you don't. And so in a lot of ways, the editorializing is either the person that's really in love with it and is like, oh my God, or the opposite. And so you hear a lot of the opposite. And that would be the things where people would be like, see, this line's dying. All you see is negative comments online. And I go, and I look at our orders and I'm like, this is the best line we've ever made. Like, we sold more of this one than anything previous.
Mm-hmm.
And that's sort of the thing where I will go into social and read the comments, because a lot of times there are notes in there that things that we missed. There'll be a guy like, I can't remember his, I'm bad with all these names and I'm gonna apologize to this guy, but like when we did Bebop for Turtles, one of the guys on Instagram commented, he's like, you should totally make a variant of this head painted like the toy.
Or oh, the pink head,
like,
yeah. Yes.
Yeah, and we were like, we should do that. That's a good idea. Mm-hmm. So we did it and then sent, you know, like, hey man, we're going to make that. Send me your address, we'll send you one. So there's constructive criticism where, and good ideas that come out of it. But when it's just belly aching, then I try to filter that out.
And one thing that, you know, at least in my experience, Super 7 has always been good at is saying, like, you know, if they're if there is something you miss, if there is a if there is a mistake or an opportunity to improve, you usually jump on it. Simpsons Ultimates, you know, Mo was missing his apron, and you know, y'all immediately were like, his apron's coming. We don't know what happened, but it's coming. We got you taken care of.
Things like that invariably happen, and that's the part that, you know, same thing people also don't understand, where you're like, I don't know. I have a sample here with Mo's apron. He's the one that shipped, no apron. You're like, where did it go? I don't know. So, but it was supposed to come with it, so we'll fix it. And the same thing, like, there's time to time, whether it's bad paint or broke, you know, something got through QC, somebody gets it, they're like, look at this, and this is all off. It's like, yeah, that shouldn't be like that. Send it back to us. Like,
yeah,
contact Rudy at customer service. I'll give you a shipping number and we'll send you a new one, because it's not supposed to be like that. If you, you know, if you go to most industry, I'm going to be on a tangent here. Like, I, you know, if you're talking about printing, it's 3%. They expect a 3% run rate. Like, when I sell to Target, there's a 3% defective rate before I even ship it to them, even though I know I'm shipping theoretically 100% undefective. Just off the top, 3% are defective. So if you make, once again, if you were to make 1,000 figures and you figure a 3% defective rate, that's 30 figures. You don't see 30 figures worth of defections from us, but you'll see, there'll be a couple that show up. There's just no way around it.
Yeah. Any sort of manufacturing, you're gonna have that problem.
Yeah. Yeah. So,
which is, I mean, it's not even really a problem. It's just, you know, that's just how manufacturing works when you're, you know, making 1,000 or 2,000 or 5,000 or something.
Yeah. You're just gonna be like, all right, that one's messed up. Let me give you a right one.
Last November in Toy Collector Magazine, there was a spread about the history of Toxic Crusaders, you know, articles by Pixel Dan and by Blake Wright that were really good. And there was an interview with you in there, and you had kind of previewed the next wave of Toxic Crusaders Ultimates to include Major Disaster, Bonehead, and a Mystery Under Wraps third figure.
I don't know that I previewed it. I said that's where I'd like to go.
Fair enough. So a couple of questions there. Is that kind of what's still on the table? And if so, can we get some sort of idea of when that might be on the table?
That is where I want to go next. Obviously, as we have discussed earlier, there is a glow-in-the-dark radiation ranger coming out at New York Comic Con in just a couple days. By the time this thing gets out, maybe that day, I don't know. And then there's another figure for... keeps moving around a little bit, but there's something coming around for either December or January. So there's another figure.
Is that the Patriotic Toxie that I saw the other day?
Patriotic Toxie. Yeah.
Yeah. I saw that and I was like, that's kind of cool, because that's technically an unreleased figure.
Completely is an unreleased figure.
Yeah, you know, there was supposed to be a series two, Patriotic Toxie.
Yeah. You know, and that's a deep cut for a few people. It's not wide. And then I'm trying to find the spot next year for Major Disaster and Bonehead. So the mystery third was Patriotic Toxie.
But that's going to be kind of its own thing, and then...
Yeah, it's coming separately, yeah.
Makes sense. Yeah, it's really cool to see the fact that at least Toxie has such staying power for Super 7.
Yeah, I mean, he's a great character. It's just so funny. Like, when we made the first one, we were like, you know, fuck it, we're going to make this. No one's going to care, but we care, so let's just make it. And you were like, whoa, hey, people like Toxie.
Well, not only that, but then you, like, on the same day or whatever, or the same week that hit, then there was all of a sudden the completely surprised glow-in-the-dark Entertainment Earth variant, and people went bananas for that. That sold out in a few hours.
Yeah, and... you know, you just never know. It's one of those things, like, we make things that we like. Some things hit, some things don't. You never know. Everybody's, you know, every time it's like, this is a no-brainer. It's going to slay. 50-50. And some of those things where we're like, who cares? We're just going to make this. 50-50. You never know. You never know which one of those things are going to fly. Mm-hmm. There are things that we have made where I am convinced, like, everybody's been waiting for this and it doesn't work. Same thing. Everybody's been waiting for this and then it blows up. There is no rhyme or reason. I can tell you after, 22 years, there is no rhyme or reason to any of it. None of it makes sense. So go with the gut, see what happens.
Yeah. I mean, good example. Like, I was shocked that not enough people wanted those Rescuers figures. I thought those things were gorgeous.
For me, the same thing. I'm like, there's never been Rescuers toys ever.
We know why.
Fair enough. Thanks. My emotional, I'm crestfallen. It's like,
they were so cool.
How can there not be Disney fans out there who are like, the Rescuers? Yes, let's go. I've been waiting. Mm-hmm. Nothing. Crickets. Well, it's the same thing, Power Rangers. We've had a couple Power Rangers figures that didn't go. The Power Rangers fans always like, I want more monsters. I want more monsters. So I was like, all right, we're making Madame Woe. She's never been made before ever in anything. Yeah, that's not what I want.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Guess no Madame Woe.
I was surprised by that one too. Like, I don't collect Power Rangers figures, but I thought that was interesting, that the Madame Woe thing, like, it was such a cool idea. And that's one of the things I love about Super 7 is that y'all, you put stuff out, not necessarily that is on paper, like, going to be the best selling item, but it's a cool item. And in a lot of cases hadn't existed before. And the fact that, like, you're constantly subverting expectations is something I really appreciate.
Well, thank you. I mean, that was the same thing. Like, another surprise hit for us was Vincent Price.
Mm.
When we made Vincent Price, I think it would be cool. Just make Vincent Price. He's an icon of horror.
Absolutely.
Let's just make Vincent. And then it was like, everybody else was like, yes, I've been waiting for Vincent. I did not know that. I'm glad that I know that.
I can relate to that. I mean, I love Vincent Price, but for me, like, most recently, I was like, there's going to be a Debbie Harry reaction figure. I'm buying that yesterday.
Going to be Blondie. Yeah, the funny part is, of course, is that we're making it, and she's like, what about this? What about this? What about this? And I'm like, I got to get the first one out first.
Well, I mean, for the debut, I think the parallel lines, Debbie, makes the most sense. I think that's a great one to go. But yeah, she's got a lot of iconic looks that could go for a while.
Yeah. And the same thing, like, when we did Devo, I'm fairly certain, people are going to buy Mark. But are they going to buy the other members of the band? And we're going to make all five members of the band in all five different outfits. And, so... when we got to release Bob 2, it was definitely a bit nervous. Like, it's iconic, but, Mark is the face of the band. And Bob 2 did great. Wonderful.
Well, and also, music fans aren't necessarily toy collectors. Like, there's obviously crossover, but, not as much as I think a lot of people might think.
I would agree that, and I think in the case of Devo, that person that's into Devo likes Devo. It's not more superficial thing. And so,
for sure. Though I think a good con exclusive would be, although the licensing might be nuts, might be Devo as they appeared in Heavy Metal, personally. I would buy that set in half a second.
The licensing would not be that difficult, actually. I'd actually considered that. See, these are these things. Like,
well, see, because you got Devo, which obviously, like, you guys, you're working with them, but then you'd also have to license Heavy Metal from Sony. So I know that gets kind of weird when you're crossing over IPs.
We do that a fair amount. We've got some really cool crossover type stuff coming where it's got to be split royalty. That's the hardest part, is just getting both sides to agree to take half the money.
Sure. Just making the numbers work.
Yeah. So you take half and you take half, and together we can make this whole. And they're all like, how about I take one and they take one and we make it two? And it's like, well, then it doesn't work.
Right. So does totally off topic now, but does that mean that TMNT Universal Monsters is a possibility?
NECA just made that a little while ago.
NECA's making it, yes, agreed, and they're making some fantastic stuff, but I'm thinking in terms of the, with most of the Turtles line skewing towards updates of the Playmates versions, you know, I'd still love to see a Don the Dracula updated for 2023.
Yeah, I think that we were planning on doing some of that, but then NECA kind of beat us to the punch on that one, so we figured we'd let that one lay for a little while. Rainy and those guys are great, and you know, usually if one of us is playing in one area, well, the other one of us goes to another spot. We try to stay, you know, next to each other. We're both friends, and mm-hmm. they make great stuff as well, so we don't want it to be competitive per se. Rising tide.
And it's strange too. Like there's such a, you know, there's always an us versus them sort of component in the collecting world, because they're like, especially when it comes to Turtles, people are like, oh, NECA is better, or, oh, Super 7's better. And I always say, why would you compare the two? They're completely different types of products for different types of people.
Yeah, they're definitely, yeah, in that's the thing, you know, when we got the license, we thought we had it. Randy thought he had it. We both showed up to Toy Fair with the license. We're like, we're making Turtles. They're like, we're making Turtles. We're like, wait, you're making Turtles? I'm making Turtles. You're making Turtles? I'm
And you find yourself living in a Spider-Man meme. Yeah.
Exactly. We were completely living in the Spider-Man meme. And so we just sat down. I was like, all right, you've been already doing some of this as con exclusives that are cartoon-centric. Why don't you go down that route? We'll go down this sort of more toyetic route. And then we're further away from each other. And then we can play in our own space. So, yeah, I think the people that do an us versus them haven't ever met us or them, because yeah. When we go to the shows, we're like, hey, man, what's going on?
Yeah. I mean, you know, everybody's friendly. Everybody's like, everybody's just happy to be making cool stuff.
Completely. Completely. Same thing, you know,
people shouldn't focus on one being better than the other. They should just focus on the fact that, like, we have so many choices as collectors.
Yes.
That's an amazing thing. There's never been a better time to be a toy fan.
It is completely true. 100%.
The licenses go deep, as evidenced by Toxic Crusaders, like something I never thought, you know, we would get. But it sounds like to start to wrap things up, and thank you so much again for your time.
Oh, I mean, talking about toys.
yeah, I mean, I could talk about toys forever, but with Toxic Crusaders, it sounds kind of a little bit like slow and steady wins the race.
Yeah, it is slow and steady wins the race. It's not one of those where I can just, you know, and I hate it to sound like it's all about finances, but, you know, there's a certain bit where you got to make sure that things are, you know, moving along and, you know, clicking along. But we're making more Toxic Crusaders. It's just slow and steady, like I said. I'm sure people would like it faster, but it just doesn't always get pushed in the front of the line. And as we've gotten bigger, I hate to say the constraints because that makes it sound weird, but it's like, you know, there's a lot of things we want to do. And when you're really small, no one cares. No one pays attention. You know, we've gotten to a decent size now that all of a sudden the things that we do, people look at. And people pay attention to, and now it's important for somebody, you know, what's happening in this, what's happening in that. Then somebody comes and goes, well, we've got a marketing moment here. And so, you know, you're scheduling things slightly differently than you might if no one cares.
Hmm.
If that makes any sense.
It's a lot easier to make moves when not as many people are watching.
Yeah, because I'm going to say this, and somebody's going to take it out of context and make us sound like a jerk, but it's like, you know, we make other people look good sometimes because we do a good job on what we're making and we generate some excitement. So there's a lot of people that we have a lot of licenses with a lot of companies these days. Those people want to make sure they're getting their shine. So we've got to balance everything out. And it's not that we're being run by them or anything, but, you know, for me to be able to do this weird thing over here in the corner, I sometimes have to do this thing over here too. That allows me to do those things. So, you know, we'll get there. Like I said, the Toxic Crusader Ultimates finally landed, you know, in August, I believe,
mm-hmm.
in people's hands. we're hot on the heels of that August with, now that you've got it, I got another one for you. Here comes Glow, Glow Radiation Ranger. So got that right for you. There's another one planned right after. So a bit of slow and steady comes from the fact that I can't sell you the next one till I deliver you the first one. And it took over a year to deliver those first figures. So now that you've got them, I've got a couple more coming for you. And then we're going to work on it from there.
And it's an exciting time too. I think, you know, there are people out there who go, okay, well, now I've got Junkyard Dog and I've got, I just called him Junkyard Dog. I hate when people do that because that's not his name.
All of a sudden he's got the chain with the lock on it and he's coming off the top rope.
Yeah, exactly. And he's you know, yelling in the middle of the ring. Anyway.
Yeah.
I've got these figures. I want to, you know, I need bad guys for them to fight. I need kill them off. I need this. I need that. And it's like, you know, it's a marathon, not a sprint, right? Like, you guys have so many licenses, so many things you are working on. I mean, we didn't even talk very much about, you know, Super Shogun and the Super Size ones and like everything else that you're doing, all the apparel and stuff you make. Like, people need to understand too, I think, you know, especially compared to a company like, you know, Hasbro, for example. I mean, Super 7 is still a small company. And you're balancing all of those things.
Yeah, a small company would be, compared to Hasbro, would be a humorous anecdote at best. I don't know, you know, we're a rounding error.
Right.
Yeah, and it's just that thing. It's also being cognizant of how much stuff can come out at any given time. I can't just make everything all the time for everyone. There's not enough people and not enough dollars to support that. So I try to be cognizant about how often I come out with stuff to pace people. I'm not the only line they collect. I'm not the only license they collect. I'm not the only company they collect. So you've got to be realistic about how often things come out, how much you're asking the collector to pay, and how often, so that they can keep collecting it and have fun with it. And that's the ultimate goal, is it should be fun.
Yeah, I always tell people, if you're not having fun, then find something else to do. Find something to do that doesn't stress you out. You know, if it's not bringing you joy, then really, what are you doing?
Exactly. 100%.
On that note, you can purchase the New York Comic Con exclusive Radiation Ranger Toxic Crusaders Ultimates figure at New York Comic Con this week at the Javits Center in New York City, and online at super7.com as well.
Yeah, there'll be inventory slated for online as well. So.
Excellent.
Usually the Monday after, you know, so we'll make sure that we save a little bit because we know not everybody's going to fly to New York. So we'll have some online for you too.
The last listener submitted question that was sent to us was,
let's do it.
And I feel like bonus, I know the answer question to it, but we'll ask it anyway. Yeah. Bonus question. Bonus round time. I know the license is for Toxic Crusaders, but there are people out there, I don't know how many, but more than a couple, who would like to see characters from the greater Troma universe, such as Sergeant Kabuki Man.
Sergeant Kabuki is the one I get asked about the most.
Yeah. What are your thoughts there?
What are my thoughts? My thoughts right now is I need to get some other Crusaders out first, but I'm not opposed to it, and you never know. How about that for a cagey non-answer?
It's better than a non-answer, I think.
Yeah. No, you know, it's like, first up is next would be more Toxy stuff. And then we'll see. Sergeant Kabuki is the one I get asked for probably the most within the Tromaverse.
Mm-hmm.
And you never know. Never know.
Yeah. I mean, it's a niche within a niche within a niche. So, I mean, people have to be realistic about their expectations. But
it's a croissant wrapped in a pastry. I guess a croissant is. I was going to try to think of like three pastries. It's a turducken. How about that? We'll just go with that.
Yeah, it really is the turducken of IP franchises. So
yes.
Well, Brian Flynn, thank you again so much for chatting with us. Everybody watching this on the day it comes out, look for the Radiation Ranger Glow in the Dark at New York Comic Con, or stay tuned until just after New York Comic Con to be able to get them at super7.com. Brian, thanks again so much for your time. We really appreciate it.
Oh, thanks for having me. This was great fun.
I'd like to take a moment to thank Brian Flynn for being so gracious with his time and chatting with us, as well as Jen Bezur from Super 7 for giving us the opportunity to unveil the New York Comic Con Radiation Ranger action figure. The future looks bright for both Super 7 and for Toxic Crusaders, and I'm sure we'll be hearing more from both very, very soon. In the meantime, this has been Talking Trauma Extra. I am Chris Lanvier for Zach Bynes and everyone else here. This is Loudspeaker.
This has been a listener-supported production of Loudspeaker Studios. For more on this and other programs, visit loudspeaker.org.